The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. The Cold Slither, you'll be joining us
soon. Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Oh, you insulting tongue, it mocked my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And tonight I'm joined by the man behind the sound effects, at Agent_70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
We've got at PCN_Dirt on Twitter with us.
Back from vacation, everybody. Still soaking it in.
And we also have at Roddy Cat on Twitter.
Hello.
Make sure to go to our website, theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. On the website, you can find all our social media accounts to follow. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Google+. Subscribe to the newsletter. Make sure to go to Dirt's website, popculturenetwork.com.
Yay!
We are part of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. Go to cspn.us and then check out all the various podcasts on the network. We record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And if you're talking comic books on social media, make sure to use the hashtags Comic Book Chronicles or CBChron.
Nice.
All right, so everyone's back in the building. I guess, Dirt, is there anything from your vacation you want to let the viewers and listeners know about?
No. I did go to a comic book store because I always make my wife take me to a comic book store wherever we go on vacation. And so I went to Big Bang Toys Comics Games. And this is in Kentucky, I believe, yeah. So we actually went to two different states while we were gone. But the store, it's actually really well run. I really like the store. And one of the things they did was they had things grouped by theme, which I hadn't really seen before. So, for instance, they had a section that was the Marvel Cinematic Universe section. So you had the comics that would tie in with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You had the movies. You had the toys that were specific to the Cinematic Universe. And that was all on one shelf space in the store, and then you'd go around to the other side and it was all the Batman versus Superman movie tie-in stuff and the other DC movie stuff, and then you'd go to the next aisle and it'd be the Star Wars toys and the Star Wars comics and the Star Wars graphic novels. So it was interesting to see it done that way, because usually you have all the toys in one spot, all the comics in one spot, and so it was neat to see something different, and it actually worked out pretty well. And I did pick up a couple hardcovers because they actually had their hardcovers were all half off.
Wow.
So 50% off on their hardcovers. So if my wife hadn't been there, I would have probably grabbed about 10 more. But, it was a neat store. It's Big Bang in Owensboro, Kentucky. It was a nice place. If I can get back down to the area again, I will. But the business card, it looks like a comic book cover. That's also a neat idea.
Oh, cool.
So they've done a good job there, so shout out to them.
Good job. So, Dirt, I have one question before we move on. Did you happen to, maybe take a couple of photos to kind of compare, keep as reference? Because this might be, something to start, like a small corner of the store of your shop.
Yeah, actually, I did. I snuck a couple pics while I was pretending to text my wife of how he had it, arranged by the different themes.
Sure.
So I could go back and...
It's not a bad idea. I might even recommend that to the little shop that I patronize, Carmine Street Comics, shout out to them.
Diamond Comics, the distributor, every so often, one of their sales agents, when they go and visit a store, will take pictures of the store and interview the employees, and then they do a little write-up on the retailer's website. So it's not publicly available. You can't just go look up your favorite store, but retailers can look up other stores and see, what's the sign out front look like, how is the stuff arranged, how are new comics laid out,
right.
you know, how do they have the back issues, all that kind of stuff. So it's not uncommon to see that type of stuff. You know, you get two or three of those every week on the Diamond Retailer website, mm-hmm. but I've never seen one set up quite the way that this store was.
Cool.
So it really kind of blew my mind.
Good job on their part. Now I'm going to Google them and see if they have pictures online.
All right, so our first segment of the night is going to be comic book reviews for the week of June 8th, 2016. Again, we had a lot of DC Rebirth books come out, I think five total, and then some of their other continuing issues. We had a couple of Civil War tie-ins. So where do we want to start first? How about we get to the one we were talking about before the show started that we weren't too crazy about, and that was Aquaman Rebirth.
All right. So let me pull that up.
I'll start out by saying the obligatory. I didn't hate it. I didn't think there was anything really terrible about it, but it was basically just a recap there. It existed only to bring in new readers. If you've read any issue of Aquaman in the last 4 years, you know, this really wasn't for you. So you can say that it serves a purpose of, you know, giving a synopsis for any new readers. And, you know, if you're a new reader that has not read Aquaman at all and you're, you know, thinking about maybe getting into it, then go ahead, by all means, grab it because it's really written for you. But for anyone who's been a big Aquaman reader, there are no revelations about Rebirth in here. It doesn't set up anything new. It just... you know, like I said, it gives you a recap, a synopsis of everything that's been going on just so, you know, you can join with the new series.
That's a good recap. My only note in our notes was that this was a tough slog because I felt like I was constantly searching for what was new and fresh about this take, and I didn't get one. I think what it is, just as you said so well, is that this is a summary of what Aquaman is. They even reference some of the misconceptions and the jokes that people say about Aquaman and his powers and his status. But other than that, it's really just said, you know, the setup is really just, I guess, reestablishing the antagonist of the series, or at least the first antagonist of the series that's in the that's on the cliffhanger page at the end.
Well, and
we haven't seen that guy in a while.
Yeah, but even like the jokes that they bring up about his powers and the, you know, talking to fish and whatever, mm-hmm. that's all stuff that was actually covered in Aquaman 1 of the New 52 in 2011.
Was it? Oh, wow.
Yeah. So if you go back and read that, you'll see that he goes into that same restaurant and he orders the seafood platter, and they're like, "Well, you can't eat fish." And he's like, "Why not?" Well, because you talk to fish, and they all give him this weird look. So.
Oh wow! Well, that was 5 years ago at this point, Dirt. Unfortunately, we know how the comic book industry works. You know how it regards things that happened 5 years ago. So.
Yeah, well, and they say that the average reader sticks around for 4 years.
Right.
So I mean, there you go. There's your window. So, but you know, it goes right back to it being a synopsis. And like you said, there wasn't really anything new. We didn't get any revelations, unlike some of the other books that came out this week. This one just, I guess there's nothing big that's really going to change with Aquaman with Rebirth. I guess they figure he's fine the way he is. So there's an answer right there. That's right. The insight that you're getting is that there's no big change for Aquaman.
There it is.
All right. And now and I'll agree with what Dirt and Agent 70 both said. It's more for new readers, getting them caught up on the happenings of Aquaman and how society sort of makes him out to be a joke, but showing how powerful he is. I'm ready to see what his battle with Black Manta is going to be about. And something that, I guess maybe because I missed some of the New 52 Aquaman stuff, is Black Manta mentions how Aquaman killed his father. So I'm like, oh, did that happen? Or is this a case of the villain twisting facts to fit his narrative? So got to wait to see how that plays out. Let's see, Flash Rebirth number one. This was almost sort of like the part two to DC Universe Rebirth number one, because we see beat by beat a reunion that for Barry and Wally that played out in the DC Universe Rebirth number one. We see it here, and then we see the fallout from it. So for those who read the Rebirth issue, we see, you know, that Wally West was going around the DC Universe to find someone to help anchor him and help rescue him from the Speed Force, where he'd been trapped, I guess, for the last 10 years. And he's losing hope, but then Barry finally remembers him, reaches out, grabs him, pulls him back. They hug. They hug it out. They start exchanging notes, or more of Wally filling him in on what he knows about someone manipulating their last 10 years. Wally says he's going to go off and find the Teen Titans, who aren't teens anymore, but he's going to go search them out, which I guess we'll see the first part of that in next week's Titans Rebirth number one. And Barry goes off to do some research with Batman regarding Flashpoint and Thomas Wayne's note and whatnot. And one thing I thought was cool was, you know, just like there's multiple Spider-Mans and multiple Captain Americas now, you know, Wally West isn't Kid Flash, he's just Flash. There can be two Flashes in the world, so why not?
Okay. I was just going to say, one thing that I found interesting was we've had a lot of people come into the store over the past 2 weeks, and they go, I want the Rebirth series. And it's like, well, there isn't a Rebirth series. There was the special, and then it's just lying wide. All this stuff is going to happen. But this issue feels like the follow-up for Rebirth. I mean, this is technically Rebirth number two.
Right. I was just flipping through this, and I see there's a panel or two that basically are the next pages of where we end in Rebirth.
Right. I mean, it goes back to Batman and his discovery at the end of Rebirth. It ties in with Flash. Flash, of course, was a central focus of the Rebirth storyline. So this is continuing that specific thread out of Rebirth, which, I mean, I guess makes sense. I mean, Flash was the one who set up the whole Flashpoint thing in the first place. So, and Flash Rebirth was one of the big storylines that, you know, kicked off the idea of getting back to the key components of a character and restoring the character. So it makes sense that he's going to be a central part of it, but I just think it's interesting. Now, if someone comes in and says, I want the next part of Rebirth, well, there is no next part of Rebirth, but I tell you what, grab this Flash, because that's a key part of the story.
Mm. Absolutely. Yeah, I kind of enjoyed reading this also. I thought it was kind of the part where Barry and Bruce, or, you know, Barry's kind of talking about the way he's talking to Bruce, and like he considers him a scientist, and I was thinking, like, hey, they're science bros. But
awesome science bros.
Yep. Yes, awesome science bros. But that part was kind of interesting, and the, I guess that whole they're being watched thing, which I'm going to assume because of the last part,
yes,
is not because of the part that Barry and Bruce talks about, which at first I was thinking about, because I'm not, you know, because they kind of bring up the thing that Batman's found is in the cave, and I was thinking, oh, okay, that was why. That might be why that's the case, but now when we see somebody show up at the end, then that's might be something different than what I was thinking. I thought it was kind of weird that Barry. I thought it was kind of weird that Barry was kind of so quick to want to go tell Iris about it, but then, you know, I guess it makes sense, you know, when not all the facts were there.
I just think overall this was a really good follow up for Rebirth, and this one got me real excited again. Also,
cool.
Good. So at least we'll have a good starting point for Flash. I just wanted to comment on the art. I thought the art, you know, just I'm literally flipping through this now. I didn't have a chance to read it, so I can't really speak to the story. But I'm flipping through the pages and just kind of, you know, analyzing the art. It looks kind of it's almost a loose but very detailed style. It has some clear influences that I'm trying to place.
Well, it's the artist different. Worked on Amazing Spider-Man.
Ah, okay.
He did Amazing Spider-Man?
Yeah, he was one of the
rotating artists?
Yeah. Because they were doing it, you know, weekly or 4 month, however it worked out. So they had rotating artists. And I remember when they – was it Superior? I think it was Superior Spider-Man where he was the lead artist on that one. But he worked on Amazing. But on Superior, that's when Marvel was making their second big push on the Marvel AR augmented reality thing.
Right.
And so if you scan the cover, Dan Slott popped up on the cover, and he was like, hey, we got a great issue for you. And he said the artist's name, D. Giandomenico.
Giandomenico.
And the way it just rolled off his tongue, I was like, how long did he have to practice to say that name? I was really impressed. And it's one of those things that just stuck in my head was Dan Slott, just pulling that name out. So when I saw it, I was like, oh, it's that guy. So I knew the artwork was going to be good.
Yeah, gotcha. Cool.
Yeah, I knew him from All New X Factor is where I think I first saw his art. So Yeah, cool. I'm glad he's getting a sort of a spotlight here on The Flash. A lot of people will be seeing his work, so it's good.
And a lot of them for the first time. Because yeah. There are, I can definitely say that there are a lot of new people coming in for Rebirth that we've, you know, maybe we saw them on Free Comic Book Day and then you never see them again type people, you know. Rebirth is a thing. People are definitely interested.
Cool. Do we want to stick with Rebirth or do we want to skip around?
We can do more. There was the Wonder Woman Rebirth. Did anybody else read that?
Yeah, man. I did.
I really like this one as well.
Yeah, I like this a lot, too, because of the way it brought up the whole fact that there are these different histories, and it's starting to play with her mind, and she can't figure out, you know, which history is the right history. And, of course, you know, these are all, every so often they relaunch Wonder Woman and they just rewrite everything. Like, oh, it's not the way you thought it was. We're going to do it this way now. And, you know, just never had any sort of hammered down real origin before. And this plays directly into that as part of Rebirth. And I like the way it's played into the fact that she talks about how she's been lied to. And so yep. She, you know, now she does, she's getting some sort of insight, some sort of clarity. She doesn't know what the actual truth is, but she knows that, you know, it's somewhere out there and she's going to try to hunt it down and find it. This got me really interested. Wonder Woman is one of those that's going to flip every other issue because it's going to come out twice a month. So issue one of Wonder Woman will be her in the current day, and issue two of Wonder Woman will be set in the past, and they'll keep flipping back and forth. I'm not sure how interested I am in the year one storyline, but after reading this, I'm very interested for the modern day storyline. So
right.
I was not going to read this at all. I just happened to, you know, just because it was Rebirth, I was like, well, I'll give it a shot. And now I'm a lot more interested than I was before.
Cool. It did its job.
I really liked Matthew Clark's art at the beginning. There was that one splash page, I think, where they have, like, the credits for the creators listed where she's, like, lunging towards the reader. I was like, whoa, that is pretty nice. So I know he's not one of the rotating artists on the book, but hey, he could fill in, and I'd enjoy it.
Yeah, that was part of this I thought was... Go ahead, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, Wonder Woman's a character for me that I'm not familiar with too much. I mean, I know of her, but I've really never read any of her comics, to be honest. But I hear good things about what Greg Rucka has done with her in the past, and hey, this is a new jumping-on point, so why not try it out?
Yeah, I'm kind of similar in that respect. I've read things... Certain things, you know, pretty much the wiki page on her and whatnot for the most part, and everything else has come from, like, the animated series, you know, here and there. But I thought this was an interesting read also. I also thought it was interesting that the part, spoiler alert, so she uses the lasso on herself to kind of further it. And I thought...
That was clever.
Yeah, I thought it was too. And I was also thinking, like, wait, I didn't think that would ever work on her. Because I figured it was, you know, it would work for everybody but her. But I guess, turns out it doesn't. I mean, it does.
Well, there was something on Bleeding Cool where she's used it on herself before, but she doesn't ask herself a question, and that's the difference. Like, there have been times in the past where people have tied her up in her own lasso, you know, snuck up on her, or she did it herself in order to, you know, protect herself or whatever, but this is the first time she's done it and asked herself a question, and that may be why it's the first time we're seeing it, because before, when she's done it, you know, it was just for the sake of tying her up, so she couldn't get away or whatever. But this is the first time she actually used the power itself, and, I mean, you know, there's really no reason why. I mean, it makes sense that it, you know, it could work that way. I mean, why not? If it works, it works. There's no reason why it wouldn't work on herself.
Right. Yeah, true. But I guess I was just thinking, I was like, well, you would think something like that would have been built not to use against her. But I guess, yeah, like you said, she's been tied up with it and she's used it on herself before. So there's no reason why it wouldn't.
Let's see. Those the three Heroes, Rebirth number ones. But then also included in it were Action Comics 957 and Detective Comics 934. So I think definitely a potential click of the week for me is going to be Detective Comics. I love this team, Batman, and just the whole setup of it.
I like the idea, and I like how they changed Tim Drake back to his old costume, and he's not in that stupid feathery thing that he's been in the New 52. I don't know if it's been retconned back to, like, this was his suit all along, or, you know, what the deal is, but I've noticed that the Batgirl, who was the Russian mafia daughter, she's now called Orphan. I don't know if this has come up in the New 52, but she was a Batgirl for a while, and apparently that has been wiped out of continuity. And spoiler is Stephanie Brown, and I guess her run as Robin has been, and Batgirl have both been pulled out of continuity. So there's no Girl Robin at this point. in the history of Batman, so I guess maybe that's something that they'll address at some point in the future, having both of them on this team. But I thought, when you saw the preview pics and they were going to have Clayface in there, it's like, how is this going to work? This doesn't make any sense that Clayface is going to be part of this team. And then the way they did it, it made sense. You know, I bought it when it was over. I was like, okay, I can see it now. I'm ready to go with this.
Yeah, definitely glad. Tim, being a child of the 90s, Tim Drake was my Robin growing up, even though I wasn't a big DC reader. I think the time I started reading comics was right around the same time he became Robin, because I remember getting some like trade of, and it had like, I guess, whatever limited series or whatever thing that was launched at the time where he was going training around the world with different trainers. Was it Batman sent him off to train?
I think that was the first Robin miniseries.
Yes. I've got that downstairs somewhere. So I'm glad, like you said, glad to see him in the back in the red and green and the yellow cape and not the feathers. Batwoman, I'm glad to see be sort of the co-lead of the book, just because I'm not familiar with her at all. I never read any Batwoman, any comics involving her, period, to be honest. So, and then you can ring the spoiler bell again, Agent 70, where Batman reveals his secret identity to her to put them on sort of an even playing field. But then she, of course, already suspected that Bruce Wayne was Batman, and them being first cousins and all.
What, their first cousin? Oh, my God.
She's a Kane, and Martha Wayne was a Kane, so.
Oh, thank you for clearing that up. That's not a spoiler. That's not a spoiler to me, for real.
The one thing I didn't like was when she goes to Bruce, like, I'm not your trainee, I'm your equal. And I'm sitting there thinking, no, you're not. I mean, okay, like, I you got to sell your team, I get it. You know, you got to say something in the book so that people aren't going to, you know, downplay her from the get-go. But, I mean, come on. Batman's equal? No.
Batman has no equal, right?
Except maybe John Cena.
Oh, no! Can't see me.
Oh, big props to the art team, Eddie Barrows, then Gabe Eltabe. Not sure I pronounced his last name. I think he's the colorist, or might be the inker on it. I don't have the credits here in front of me. But there was a lot of great visuals here in the book. I liked how, like, little subtle things like these ridges that you could see in Batman's cape when the light hit it. Batman standing in silhouette early on when he's looking down at Azrael. Batwoman swinging through Gotham. Just, you could tell, I noticed it when Eddie was drawing the Martian Manhunter book that his art had, you know, sort of elevated from sort of his work even a couple years ago, but it's definitely worthy of Detective Comics here. And Action Comics number, what did I say, 957?
Yep, 957.
Mm-hmm.
It's been hard for me to try to get the numbering for these two right.
This book, like, I can tell that they're purposely trying to misdirect with this. They're basically throwing everything they possibly can out there just to throw it all on the table, just to throw everybody off. So you can read this, and after this issue, you have no idea what your expectations are going to be continuing with the story going forward, because very little of this, I don't want to say it doesn't make sense, but they're obviously playing with the reader to a certain degree by throwing in Doomsday, throwing in another Clark Kent, just like all of this stuff. It's basically all these things from the 90s series that Dan Jurgens was a big part of. He's, you know, coming back in on Action Comics with this. All of this stuff is being thrown into this mix, but it's all being thrown at once.
And I was going to say, it's not really a spoiler, because all of this stuff's on the alternate cover, like the second cover. I know that there's two covers to this book.
Well, that's the main cover. This is the main cover that shows everything.
Oh, right. The main cover just...
Yeah, the alternate's just this character shot, but yeah.
I didn't realize that was the alternate, because that's the one I picked up.
Oh, was this one?
Yeah, the diving one, yeah.
Yeah. So, well, here's the key. I can tell you, if you look at the UPC barcode, okay, if you ever want to know if it's the regular or the one of the variants, there's two boxes. You've got the main UPC box, but then there's that secondary box that has five digits. If you look at those five digits, the fourth digit tells you if it's a number one, it's the main cover. If it's a number two, it's the second cover. It's a number three, number four, etc.
Gotcha. All right. So this is the main cover for Flash Rebirth.
Right, because it's got the 1-1 at the end.
One. Yeah. Right. Okay. Cool.
I did not know that. Now I know.
Yeah. So now you know.
Ding, ding, ding.
Dropping that retailer knowledge.
Knowing is half the battle.
You know, and the scary thing is we have to use that knowledge a lot because so many small press companies will put out 3, 4, 5, 6 covers and with absolutely nothing to tell you. A lot of times they don't even have the artist's name signed on the cover, so you have to do a fair amount of Googling to try to figure out who drew which cover on these things, and the barcode really helps to separate out what's, you know, they'll say cover A, cover B, cover C, so you're looking for a 1, 2, 3 on there to figure out which one's which. So, anyway, but yeah, I liked the story. I thought it was interesting, and I can tell it's going to confuse a heck of a lot of people who are jumping in for the first time. It's the direct opposite of the Aquaman book. This is purposely trying to confuse you and misdirect you and mislead you. Throw 9,000 mysteries and subplots in from the get-go. So I enjoy that. I'm looking forward to seeing how all of this plays out, but it's just very amusing how different this was from the other books.
I'm flipping through this book. I'm seeing that he does the shaving himself with heat vision in the mirror with the thing. I'm sitting here like, that's always astounded me.
I thought it was kind of cool.
That's definitely a callback.
Yeah, that was something that they brought back in the 90s. I remember that being a big thing of how he did it.
So is this a big like nostalgia run in Action Comics and then Superman, you know, Superman Comics bringing back the pre-New 52 Superman, or as I call him, OG Superman, Doomsday showing up?
I mean, technically, he's the Superman from 86, so after Crisis on Infinite Earths. That's who this Superman is. So he's not the old one from the 40s or, you know, anything like that. But it is fun to see that character come back. I talked about that when they did Convergence, and they did the whole storyline bringing him back, and I loved seeing the character again, and then when they spun him off into the Lois and Clark, I loved seeing the character return. I just didn't know at the time that he was going to, you know, come back to being the focus, being the Superman of the DC Universe again, but I love it. I love seeing that character come back, and like I said, one of the main things about it is it makes all those old stories, important again. It makes them matter again. Like, all of that stuff happened. It's no longer just a story of an alternate universe. Like, it happened to this character. So, therefore, it happened. It's part of the ongoing history, even though he may be in a different spot now. All that stuff shaped who he is, and you can go back and see that. And with it being Dan Jurgens, he's going to play off of that stuff. So, I'm really excited for this. For what's going on in the Superman universe going forward. And, of course, it helps that I read all of that stuff. I mean, that was the meat and potatoes of what I read as a kid. So
cool. I think that's all the Rebirth books. We didn't miss one, I don't believe. There's some other DC stuff out this week, but I don't think anyone has read it, right? Wait, well, did Superman, Lois, and Clark end?
It ended last month.
That was last month, okay.
Actually, I read Wacky Raceland, but I'm not sure what exactly to say about it.
What'd you think?
It was interesting. It's set in a post-apocalyptic, I guess, Earth or what have you. You see pretty much gritty reboots of all the, if you know anything about wacky races, this book is nothing wacky about it. It is kind of, well, I don't want to say silly because that's kind of crazy too. But basically, look, because of the post-apocalyptic setting, it's almost got a Mad Max type of feel. You have sentient cars. You have Muttley's a biomechanical dog. You know, Penelope Pitstop is like this kind of hardcore driver. They kind of go into a couple of pages of her backstory, how she got there, and they also do a couple of pages on how one of the others got there. So there's almost a Contest of Champions type vibe to it, because you have this person out in the shadows of somewhere called the Announcer, who is getting all these races together, and all these races are supposed to be going to this place called Utopia, who is this last place that's free from mutants and disease and whatever else has been going on, you know, after everything went to hell. So it's kind of like outlaw craziness going on. It's a really interesting and very strange book, actually. A lot of cursing, a lot of...
Really? Yeah. With the Hanna-Barbera thing across the top? Wow.
Yeah.
Well, this is the Adult Swim version.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's, I don't know, it was kind of weird.
All right.
Like, I'll probably check out the second issue just to see if it's going to go anywhere, but I was like, I just tried this just to see, like, what could they possibly do with this, and it looks like they're going somewhere.
All right, cool.
I did read the two Vertigo books, of course, one being Sheriff of Babylon, which has been a perennial favorite of mine. But this was the first issue where I felt like it kind of stumbled a little bit. And the main reason is that, you know, with it being Sheriff of Babylon, the main character is this guy who's trying to, you know, bring law and order to Iraq after the invasion. And he's not in this issue until, like, the last page. And he is usually the anchor.
Point of view.
Yeah, he's the one that pulls you through the story, and as the things happen to him and he acts and reacts, that's where your story moves. And he's taken out of it, and it shows, it follows the other characters, and it just, it feels like, you know, if we go back to Superman just for a second, you know, you have a story with Superman, you're reading it month after month, Superman, Lex Luthor, Lois Lane, Jimmy Olsen, and then you get, like, one issue out of nowhere that shows a scientist on Krypton who fought against somebody, and he fought against Zod, and Zod ended up killing him and stealing his technology, and that's the end of the story. And so, like, you know it's going to play into somewhere at some point, otherwise they wouldn't tell you the story, but it just kind of feels out of place. You know, because you don't have the familiar stuff that you're used to, and that's what this issue kind of felt like. It took a little detour, and it showed you a bunch of other stuff that you know is going to snowball and build, and he's going to have to deal with it. These are people that, you know, he's interacted with, that he deals with in trying to, you know, bring law and order, but he's not really there, and so it just feels like you don't really have a point of view pushing you one way or another with what you're seeing and how important it is, and, you know, it's you're seeing stuff, but there's no context really for a lot of it on how it's going to play with everything else he's doing. So, you know, I have faith in Tom King. I mean, obviously, we love everything that he's ever done,
right?
But it just was the first time that you got done with it, and I just didn't really know how I really felt about it, because it didn't have that hook, that emotional pull that you usually have watching this ordinary guy deal with this extraordinary situation that he's in. So it just, to me, it just felt like it stumbled a little bit right there.
Alrighty. Well, I'll make sure to catch up to this point so that I can actually.
I mean, it's still great. Don't get me wrong. The artwork is fantastic. You know, you can. It's still well written. You know, it just felt like you were kind of watching something else here for a little bit.
Gotcha.
The other book is Dark and Bloody. This has been a series that, honestly, when it first came out, I paid no attention to it. And then last issue, I decided to catch up and read it for no reason, just other than it was there, and I really enjoyed it. This is a modern-day horror story. It's actually an Iraq veteran. When he was overseas, he witnessed a massacre by some of the other members on the squad, and now this evil spirit of vengeance is coming back to punish him and everybody else who was in his squad, and he was like the one guy who wasn't really a part of it, wasn't really involved, and he feels guilty for years that he didn't stop it, but now the spirit of vengeance is kind of in the spot where it doesn't care. You know, it's just there for the purpose of evil and for punishment and for vengeance, and now he's got to fight to save his family against this evil. And of course, how do you explain, oh, well, this is an evil force from Iraq that has followed me over to the United States that's now killing all these people? You know, who believes you? Nobody, you know? So he's dealing with a lot of that stuff, too. So it's been a very good series. It's very creepy. It's set in, like, these rural, you know, backwoods. He's doing some moonshine distilling on the side to make ends meet, get some extra money, you know? So he lives kind of in that underworld a little bit, but it's, like I said, it's been really good at playing off that horror and that the idea of that unstoppable vengeance, that punishment that's coming for you. So I've enjoyed it a lot more than I actually thought I ever would. It's been really good.
Alrighty. So with that, are we moving over to Marvel?
Yeah, I don't think I have anything else DC, so.
Yep.
Yeah, I've only got a couple of Marvel and then one Image book.
All
right. Well, do we want to jump right to Civil War, or do we want to do some other stuff first?
Well, I was about to say, since you brought up Tom King.
Yes, good stuff, Vision. Good stuff.
Vision number 8.
Yeah. So here we have, this book continues to be good. I don't think there's no one on the cast who would disagree with that. Here we have a visit from Victor Mancha, who is also a product of Ultron. He is technically Vision's brother. He comes to the Vision's house under the guise of, I guess that's a spoiler, but...
Hold on, I'll ring it.
Under the guise of him having a internship somewhere in D.C., so he's staying with them. He's getting to know the family, kind of getting in good with everybody, sure. You know, to great effect. But as this book tends to go,
there's twists and turns.
There is a twist, and at the end of the story, which we'll get to in a second, we'll get to. Because at first I was thinking, I was like, okay, he's, you know, kind of getting into,
right.
He's kind of in here good, getting. Go ahead.
What I was going to say is I wanted to backtrack to the very, very beginning of the story, because where we were at the end of the last issue, you know, we had this big reveal that, you know, that Agatha Harkness was going to, you know, that was saying that something bad is going to happen. And what we have at the end of the Vision story, that the last issue, was that to kind of fix things, he created a dog. You know, mild spoiler alert, right? So what we have at the beginning of this issue is kind of the Vision's family reconstructed and created and remade whole with the addition of Sparky, the dog. And there's a couple of very, you know, kind of heavy themes in this, especially, you know, when you read over the some of the narration and the voiceover that Tom King has employed so very well in this. You know, I think we now... I'm not 100% sure that Agatha Harkness is still narrating at this point. I think it might be somebody else.
Right.
Right. Yeah, I got that feeling too.
Mm-hmm. So, reading up to the point where Roddy was about to get to, it was just a very, you know, I love the setup. I love the fact that they wrapped in this character who was part of Avengers AI and the Runaways, and it wasn't quite out of left field, but it was great. You know, the one note that I put in was that I love that Tom King is folding in so many sides of Ultron as the father family tree, you know, the father figure in the family tree, you know, and a little bit of, you know, Hank Pym is probably going to come in at some point too. So, you know, I thought it was an extremely well-constructed story. I like the interaction between Victor La Mancha and the Vision's children, and we're leading up to the reveal, and I'm going to ring the spoiler bell because I think it's a pretty big one that Roddy was about to get to. So one second. Go ahead.
Well, I'm not sure if Hank Pym is going to show up on the. There's not much. I mean, he could. There's not much longer.
There is 4 issues left, isn't there?
Right.
Yeah, there's still time.
But I'm not sure. Well, I'm sure there's a way to kind of plug him in there. It wouldn't be that hard. But mm-hmm. I'm kind of curious as to why they would. But that being said, as we're going through the course of the story, we see, you know, the narration going on. We see Victor getting good with the family. You know, just kind of gaining everyone's trust. And at the same time, during the course of the narration, we also see him, or we see it being seem like he's wrestling with himself because of his past during the course of the narration. But right. What we get to is there's a point where Vin, the son, is playing with the dog, and they're outside and throws the ball. The dog goes after the ball, but phases through the house that was supposedly empty across the street, and Vin chases after him, and they both see Victor, who is talking to the Avengers, basically him kind of saying, hey, yeah, he's gaining all their trust, but Vision wouldn't talk to him, but he could still get up to talk and whatever. So they're basically trying to find out what's going on with Victor with Vision through Victor.
Right, because there's been a lot of suspicion raised around the Vision family because of all the, I hate to say this, all the debts. Exactly, yeah. So. You know, he's been sent in there to investigate.
Mm-hmm. And typical for this book, we have Victor confronting Vin, who's trying to keep him, who didn't seem to be doing anything, because you never really see from Vin, but, you know, Victor's trying to calm him down and say, hey, stick around. I guess that's assuming Vin was kind of like backing away. You see Victor getting more and more agitated, and suddenly you see Victor using his powers, and that's where we end this book.
Right.
I thought this issue worked really well as a jumping on point. If you've been hearing about Vision, but of course the first few issues were sold out, and so you thought, well, maybe I'll wait for the trade because I don't want to jump in the middle of the story. This is actually, I think, a perfect spot for a new reader to jump in, because with Victor's arrival, there's a lot of explanation about some of the stuff that's been going on and about the relationships between these different characters. And so I think that really works as the point where someone could say, well, okay, now's the time that you can pick up issue 8, and you're going to see the finale of the story, but there's enough information that that you can glean about what's been going on and some of the stuff with the neighbors and visiting the gravesite and all of that kind of stuff that gives you enough background that you can follow the story.
Sure. And there's a tease on the cover as well. If you look at the cover, there's definitely, it definitely implies that there's some intervention being planned.
And I want that welcome mat for my house.
Yeah, that's a cool one. That's a cool one. Also, if you have a chance, the letters page in this book was replaced it was actually the second page of the letters page was, behold the list of dog names that were submitted by the readers for the dog that eventually became Sparky. I love this book.
I love the little Peanuts-inspired cartoons that are on there as well.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Love this book. Love
the letters page in that page, which was kind of interesting read.
Love this book. Easy, easy, early spoiler, Click of the Week for me.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I was going to say also that this is, for me, a very strong contender for Click of the Week.
Yeah, same here.
We all loved it. Right. Anyone read Guardians of the Galaxy number 9?
Tim, you're underwater.
Breaking up.
Oh, no.
Chess, it happened to someone else.
It used to happen to me all the time. And then I spent money on an actual audio setup.
Well, yeah, I do too, but I don't know if for some strange reason it's still happening. But
I think your audio setup is super complicated. You have like a mixer and like multiple wires and stuff.
And I think it's just Roddy has like 10 neighbors playing Destiny on Xbox Live right now, and it's
might actually be right about that.
Maybe it's hogging up all the bandwidth.
Well, that shouldn't be the case. I would have to talk to AT&T on that one, Ben.
Yeah, right.
But what we said, Guardians of the Galaxy number 9.
Yep.
Is that where we're at? Okay, so we finally see who they went after. So we got Drax and Gamora, who were the pretty much the linchpins of this plan, in actually going to find the person they were looking for. And if you want to go ahead and ring the spoiler bell, go ahead and just get us out of the way.
1 second.
They fight through a whole bunch of people. Drax is, you know, doing his thing, being all battle hungry and whatnot. And they finally get to the person who happens to be Angela.
Ooh.
Yeah. And that was my thought. I was like, okay, I'm thinking, like, okay, my ancestors or somebody, you know, Moondragon, hell, I don't know. And it's and Angela, which was kind of funny because it was like, okay, wait, I totally forgot she was actually involved with these with the Guardians.
Right, so, because she had been displaced when they brought Mogrim's blue-eyed boy Benji to the team.
I'm glad I had correctly guessed who it was they were going to rescue.
Right.
Like, I think it was 3 issues ago. Do I sound like I'm fine now, by the way?
Yes.
Yeah, like 3 issues ago when they mentioned it was a woman that they were going to rescue, I was like, oh, it must be Angela since she was a part of the team and her book is canceled now, so she can be used somewhere else. But
I don't remember her being used all that effectively in this book, though. So
she wasn't, but then the book really wasn't that good pre-Secret Wars to me. So
right. Mm-hmm.
But this storyline I've enjoyed, and even the whole King of Spartats and Hala destroying Spartats and going crazy, that was fun, too. Mm-hmm. So this book has been on a roll for me since Secret Wars. I like you know, there's been so many, you know, prison planet stories done to death, but with such a large team and splitting each issue up into two, into pairs working together, and then us finally seeing because when it first started, you didn't really get a sense of what they were doing, and as the last couple of issues have sort of like revealed and pulled the curtain back to show, you know, they're going to fight the Badoon. They're going to this prison planet. They're going to rescue someone. Here's the strategy they're taking. Each team has a role. And then finally seeing Angela is who they're going to rescue. And then I assume it's going to end next issue since Angela, they've revealed her, and it'll be their escape off the planet with probably something crazy happening at the end of it.
Well, they still got to go get Peter because, if I'm not mistaken, he got caught.
Right.
And so I think all of this whole arc, which I thought was kind of a I mean, while it was good, it seemed like it was kind of a filler because they didn't have seem like much to go on. But I guess all of that was to kind of set up the fact that now they got to go and everybody's back together and they go to get Peter. So wherever they go after that is whatever. But nevertheless,
gotcha.
It is what it is.
They have to tie into Civil War too.
Right.
So.
Right.
I was going to mention that I didn't realize that the team had grown to such proportions until I got to the teaser for the next issue and the teaser for the Art Adams cover, I presume, for the next issue. And there's a ton of Guardians characters on this. There's a bunch. So, I was amazed. I haven't been reading this as closely, so definitely a few issues behind.
They're the new Avengers.
Definitely.
Everyone's a Guardian. You can be a Guardian.
If you're out in space, you're a Guardian. There you go.
All right. So I guess there's another big Civil War 2 book out this week. It's Amazing Spider-Man number 1. Did you guys read that?
Yes.
No.
No. Okay, so I won't spoil too much. Dirt, did you read it?
Yeah, actually I did, and I loved it.
So without spoiling too much for Tim's sake, what I liked about this is that this is we really see a lot more of Ulysses and what he can do in this issue than we have at any point. I also love the fact that the first page of this was an homage to Web of Spider-Man number 1. Right, Dirt? You know, yeah. What I'm talking about. Roddy Cat knows what I'm talking about too, right? So I love that, you know, like the first action sequence was an homage to Web of Spider-Man number 1. But, I like that there is a little bit of a development with, how the Inhumans are sort of interacting with the other heroes of Earth when with regards to Ulysses. And, we get a lot of insight into how Ulysses' powers work and where we're going from here. So I like that. I like that this is almost like a foundational book, kind of like what we were talking about before about Flash Rebirth, how this really does kind of build on the stuff that we saw in Civil War II. 011, and this might be an important thing to read in terms of the crossover.
I was somewhat disappointed in Civil War II number 1 mm-hmm. because I felt that do we spoil it, or I mean at this point we assume everyone's read Civil War II, but I felt that the fight with Rhodey that leads to him his situation, I'll leave it at that.
Which is never permanent. Let's say that.
Well.
But anyway, I felt like that is not like Tony says. This is what I said would happen, and it wasn't what he said would happen. Like that's not at all what he said would happen. What he said mm-hmm. would happen is what happens in this book. This mm-hmm. book puts Spider-Man right in the middle of that moral quandary of okay, this is a possible future, I guess. But how much truth is it, and how much of getting involved in trying to stop it might actually push it to becoming the truth? You know, that's where he is set up, which is not at all what happened in Civil War number 2.
Right.
In that, it was just a battle that went bad, you know. That really has nothing to do with the powers one way or another, other than the fact that that's what got him into that skirmish. But, I mean, in this, Spider-Man is now facing this point where here's someone I trust, here's someone I believe in, and now there's the possibility that they may turn on me. How much do I actually put into this vision of the future? And I think that is exactly the situation that Tony talked about. And so this is exactly what Civil War should be about when you face that type of situation on how much safety versus how much freedom. That's exactly the situation that it's supposed to be, and I think this one plays it up very well.
Since we're talking about Civil War number 1, even though that was like it was last week or whatever it was, I thought Tony's position was kind of weird, considering how many times he's been with the Illuminati or, you know, any other thing that or even Inhumanity or Secret War stuff that he just said, hey, we need to go ahead and get in front of this and do, you know, take care of this stuff before this happens. The fact that he took the position that he has seems kind of weird
to me.
Yeah,
you could make the argument that maybe he's learned from it, and so that's why, but he doesn't explain it that way.
Right.
Which is the problem with Civil War. Like I had a few problems with Civil War. Mm-hmm. It's entertaining, but I mean there are plot holes you could drive something large through. I don't know.
Sure.
I'm out of references at the moment. But anyway, but I felt this played it up perfectly. I mean this is exactly the type of situation that you need to see a hero in to see how they react to it, mm-hmm. and this is precisely the type of thing that people will argue about. One way or another, because it's one of those situations where if you don't do anything and it goes bad, well, you had the warning, why didn't you? But if you do something and then it turns out he doesn't because, you know, of whatever changed the future, then, you know, was it right for you to, be suspect of this person and treat them harshly, lock them up, whatever, when they haven't done anything yet? You know, that's really what the core of the argument is. So
right.
I appreciated this a whole lot more yeah. than what we saw in Civil War.
Understood.
Yeah, this book definitely makes that case better than the Civil War II proper. And somebody's already said this, but I like how the cover is kind of like Peter's like, oh no, not this again.
Yeah. I like that. I like that.
All right. Let's see. New Avengers number 12.
So this was funny. Yeah.
So this is this co-stars a couple of people. We see Maria Hill. This is also a Civil War tie-in, Civil War II tie-in. And like I said, Maria Hill guest stars, Dum Dum Duggan from the Howling Commandos guest stars. We see the Maker and his new Revengers. There's a lot of sort of catching up with people. We see the beginning portions from Civil War II, number one, where all the heroes are assembling to stop the Celestial, and we're catching up with like the new Avengers, or the all new Avengers with Wiccan, Hulkling, Squirrel Girl, and Hawkeye, I think.
Yeah.
But it basically comes down to some S.H.I.E.L.D. guy named Garrett, who I'm probably supposed to know, but I had no idea who the guy was.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.,
basically. Yeah, that's a TV reference.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He wants to go after Sunspot and his Secret Avengers, is what I'm going to call them now, group, and he's using Dum Dum Duggan to do it, and because Dum Dum Duggan is a LMD, Garrett's, I guess, Division of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been experimenting with some alien tech, which is also the tech found in Duggan's LMDs, so it looks like he's going to use the army of Duggan LMDs to go after the Secret Avengers. It's funny, like, I'm sitting here looking at this cover, and it's like, when was the last time we saw Power Man and White Tiger actually involved in this book?
About 3 or 4 issues ago, and you're right. That's what I was thinking. I was like, wait a minute, they really didn't have much to, they weren't even in this book, realistically.
Yeah, the last, was it the, when they introduced the other White Tiger, who's in the new, their new Revengers, I think, was the last time we saw her involved at all.
They were in the issue after that, but yeah, and it was kind of when everybody was escaping from AIM Island because she was coming after them. That was pretty much the last time we saw them. So,
but it's a Al Ewing book. It's entertaining as always because his books are entertaining.
Sure.
Paco Medina comes over from Contest of Champions to art, so the art's nice.
It looks nice.
Yeah,
that's great. About it.
I was just flipping through, and I just wanted to say, by the power of Excelsior!
Yeah, see, that the first part of this issue was pretty entertaining because you see someone you would never expect to say Avengers Assemble say it, or at least that's what we get out of it. You see that part that Age of 70 just mentions. There was something else I was going to bring up that was kind of entertaining in this about that one part. But that's pretty much all. That's where the Civil War tie-in ends, because the rest of the book just goes into the Maker and what he's doing and giant and what Garrett's trying to do. Matter of fact, even the Maker part, we only see him just kind of pop up for like 5 seconds. It's like, yeah, we're just gonna see things pop play out in him.
He sort of does the bad guy. Oh yes, in the background.
Exactly.
I watch the chess pieces move around.
Yeah, basically, it's like, yeah, I'm just gonna let them shoot themselves in the foot, and then we're gonna come in. So I guess that's gonna come along at some point.
Okay.
But other than that, yeah, this is quite entertaining, especially for that first part.
Are we rapid fire reviewing any of the rest of the stuff? Because I only got one book left.
Sure.
What about the other Civil War book?
Is there another one? What's the other one?
You didn't read your Hercules book?
I did not.
Hercules and your Totally Awesome Hulk.
Hercules.
No, I didn't read it.
I did, actually. I enjoyed it. I even sent Roddy the Star Trek reference that's hidden in there.
Nice.
And I meant to read it. I totally forgot. But
well, it's basically, I won't give too much away other than to say that, Hercules is facing, in his last series, you got him facing this pantheon of new gods. He's part of the old gods, and there's references to these new gods coming, and they're, I guess you want to say the gods of the millennials. They're self-absorbed, they're arrogant, they're
tech-based,
selfish. Yeah. And basically, Hercules is lamenting the fact that the Avengers don't call him anymore, like nobody needs him anymore. The big battle with the Celestials from Civil War breaks out, and he runs in the street to see what's going on, and She-Hulk is there saying, oh, well, A-Force just got called up. They called in everybody. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, but they didn't call me. So he's feeling really left out of everything. But what's happening is, in the midst of this battle, in the midst of what's going on with Civil War, this pantheon of new gods are using that as cover. And as everyone is distracted fighting this battle with each other, they're going to move in and do what they do to take over the world in the way that they, you know, see fit, whatever. And so Hercules has got to put together a pantheon of fighters to fight against them. So that's what this story is. It ties into Civil War because Civil War is going on in the background, mm-hmm. but it's not necessarily a direct tie-in, but it's still really well done. It's actually funny, like hilarious. I laughed out loud at several points in this book. It was really, you know, again, a book that I didn't expect anything of. I wasn't going to read it, but I just happened to because, you know, I had a copy sitting there in front of me. I really enjoyed it a lot, and I'm looking forward to reading the rest of the series.
Excellent.
So I did see the previews for this issue and the part where Dirt was talking about, you know, everybody got caught except for him. I thought I did see that part, and I got a decidedly Booster Gold vibe off of it because there was an episode of Justice League where everybody else was all fighting this big fight, and then Booster was off over here kind of in the background doing some stuff, fighting against some stuff, but nobody really knows about it or cares.
Right.
So
And that is something that he does talk about a little bit on here, is that there's really no place for him, you know, in the Avengers because he's very much a blunt instrument when it comes to this stuff. He has no finesse and diplomacy, which makes it difficult for them to use him for a lot of things. And, you know, nobody calls him anymore. He's lost his friends. But, of course, that self-doubt mm-hmm. of who he is and how much power he has and how much influence is part of how these new gods are working against him. Like, it's that seed of doubt that he has, which they are using in order to try to undermine him, to push him out of the way so they can come in. So he's got to rebuild himself back up and put together this team to fight them. So, yeah, it was really well done. It's definitely worth a read.
Cool. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. I think that does it for my Marvels. Oh, other than Darth Vader.
Yeah, I was about to say, there's two more for me. There's Darth Vader and Poe.
I was about to say, you guys would take care of the Star Wars stuff.
Oh, I read Daredevil, but it was okay. It was meh.
Oh, Daredevil was good.
It was okay.
It was good. All right, just real quickly on Daredevil. It was a little bit of Ryan and the Daniel Craig Casino Royale, right? Because there's like a card game, a Texas Hold'em card game, right, yeah. Going on. And I got a kick out of that. I love Rounders. Rounders is one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, I like the fact that he can't read the cards because of the coding on them,
right.
But he can read the other people at the table. And right. That's what gives him, you know, an ability there. But, I mean, right. It's like, yeah, you know.
I enjoy it. You know why? The reason why I bring this up and the reason why I wanted to talk about this at some point is that this has been a tough slog for 7 issues. You know, we've been talking about creepy 10-finger guy.
Right.
For
worthless 7 10-finger guy.
Yeah, exactly. For who got really, you know, really, you know, in an epic fashion by the hand. But, you know, for 7 issues, we dealt with that and with the potential new sidekick, but this issue was, you know, Matt Murdock doing something, investigating something overseas in Macau, and who and we get a superhero guest appearance at the very end that sets up the next issue. I just had a lot of fun reading this. I mean, a lot of it is, for me, or at least from my perspective, the hints and the callbacks to Rounders and the Daniel Craig Casino Royale scenes, you know, that makes me, you know, that kind of brought a lot of joy to my reading experience. But then overall, I just had a lot of fun reading this, and it was nice to be able to say that about Daredevil, because for 7 issues, it had been a tough slog.
Yeah. Well, this definitely was more enjoyable, and it did, I will credit that it felt different, whereas the Daredevil series so far has felt like a lot of retread,
right.
And just reestablishing, redoing, reexamining, reintroducing, and so finally it branched out and went somewhere. But it really didn't do a whole lot other than this poker tournament, which, I mean, it's interesting, but, right. You know, let's get somewhere. Let's do something. Come on. Chip, chop.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Chop, chop.
All right. So now back Wars. To Darth Vader. Yes.
Let's see.
You yes, guys go ahead. I didn't read it.
Yeah, I was about to say, we have the, well, I guess, is this the start was last year? Last year was the start of the last arc. Here we have Vader first talking to the Emperor about, you know, the grand scheme of things as far as the Emperor's concerned. You know, the Emperor's like, hey, everything is led up to me being here, and everything after that is me trying to shepherd how things should be going. From now on, setting up Vader as the person to be the person, except for the fact that all of the other stuff that the Emperor's kind of set aside with these other S-men or whatever, it kind of got in the way, which brought up a kind of funny part, because as the Emperor was telling everything about what's going on, and the scientist who was in charge of all that silos kind of a traitor, and he's on the run, and Vader is supposedly going to get him, or is it going to actually going to get them in the course of this issue? But during the course of the Emperor talking, you know, he brings all that up, and the Emperor's like, do you understand everything that's going on? It's like, yeah, if any of these people, you know, had dealt with me, they would be the one having this conversation and not me. But the Invader's like, but never mind, that's not important, we'll, you know, we'll keep on going. So Emperor sends him after the scientist guy, Silo. And on the other side of that, we have Vader sending the droids off to get Aphra to bring her back or kill her, which they do in their particular fashion. But the majority of the book is pretty much Vader going after the Silo guy. And, you know, what else happened? Excuse me.
Well, the one thing I found interesting was, Silo's whole thing has been implanting technology into bio forms. Right. So, like, he's got that big eye implanted on his face. Everybody who works for him has some sort of cybernetic add-on, some, you know, because he's a technology guy, whereas Vader is a force guy.
Right, his ship is a big whale with cybernetic implants on it.
It's like, it took me a minute to figure out what the heck was going on with those things. It's like these giant space whales with metal space helmets on floating through.
It's like, why does he have a brain embedded in his ship? And then you cut it outside, like, oh, okay.
Yeah, like that was. I found that really interesting, and I thought that was a clever way of expanding the Star Wars universe. And now it makes me wonder how long until that's an actual vehicle that you're going to buy at the store.
Probably never.
Are you kidding? They would like merchandise that thing.
That's true. Something like that, I think, came up in Rebels, except my cybernetics aside. At least those animals, I think, came up. But I don't remember if it was the same ones or not. But either way, so... but yeah, so we have this. We have their little, you know, the silos, like, hey, or they're coming after us, so we got something in place for them. But they're gonna learn. Okay. Coming after me is not a good idea. So Vader goes after him. Vader enters the ship, and as Dirt was getting to with what the guy does, at the end of the book, we see Vader coming face to face with the scientist who was behind the main guy who wanted to see Vader in action, and sends out. I'm assuming that's a Rancor monster with cybernetics in it.
Oh no!
Yeah. We have that again.
I love that. I don't care about the spoiler. That's pretty cool.
So I was like, okay, here we go. We got this again. So, and that's where that book ends off. And like I said, the droids were sent after Aphra, who they finally got because they were actually going to, they seemingly were going to kill her until she figured out, hey, what their plan was. And then we have that coming. So everything is starting to kind of come together to get to the end of the book and the arc and the book.
Oh, you're falling underwater.
Of course.
Wait, go ahead.
What?
Go ahead.
Oh, you cleared up.
Yeah, you cleared up.
You never stop playing Xbox. All right.
No.
All right, so what about Poe Dameron?
Okay, this was kind of weird. So, okay, Poe and Sinestro, a.k.a. Agent Terex, were kind of at the standoff. Terex's men were heating up. Well, one of the men had a flamethrower. They were heating up this big egg that these people that Poe was talking to get information from when he came across them. The egg cracked because, you know, the egg was being heated up.
I love this. We're talking about an egg crazy going on and off underwater.
Oh, it gets... Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm like, wait, this Poe Dameron book involves an egg being smuggled and being heated up? Oh my goodness.
Oh no, not smuggled, but yeah, definitely heated up. It gets silly because halfway through the book, the egg cracks, it opens up, this big winged monster comes out, and the people who were guarding it was like, hey, our savior is here, whatever, and then the monster starts going amok and just starts bashing everything. Then we see this other similar monster, who's a different color, comes along and fights this other monster. So it's like this one big kaiju battle that happens.
Oh, no.
Meanwhile, you have Poe Dameron's squad, who's outside being chased by TIE fighters, and they're kind of holding their own, but they were kind of outnumbered. So, but they finally regroup and get back together again until the kaiju battle opens up outside, and it's weird. So, and then they land to see where Poe is. The kaiju battle gets to be over because one of them won. And the people who were, you know, supposedly the savior, I mean, the holding this egg to see what it was, didn't have any idea because we find that out in the midst of this. But apparently this thing was supposed to take them somewhere and keep them safe. But the original one didn't. The one that won apparently is because they ended up getting on the back of the thing and just swooping off. And in the midst of that, Terex and Poe have a fight. You know, they go back and forth a little bit. And then because of the events of the fight, Poe ends up winning the fight, or the kaiju battle. ends up winning the fight. So here we have Terex is now under arrest, and they're at a kind of at another stalemate because it was like, well, he's like, well, you can't arrest me because so and so is this and that and the other, and it was like, well, we can't just let you go. But they get to an agreement on that. Everybody leaves, and that ends that story. Apparently, Poe gets the information that he was looking for, and this ends that arc of the story. So yeah, this was a quite weird one to read because, like I said, it broke out into a kaiju battle, but it was. But it was kind of amusing at the same time.
Okay. All righty. In the meantime, while we let Roddy figure out his audio issues, do we have any other books that we want to review before we get to our clicks of the week and the ad read?
I'm going to toss out Empress number 3 from Marvel's Icon. I guess what would you call Icon there?
Imprint.
Imprint, thank you. This is the third issue of, I think, it's this, like a 7-issue series, which I always find it weird when like a series ends on an odd number. But this might be, so far, my favorite issues of the series, but just because of like the fast-paced action of it, and Stuart Immonen's art definitely helps with that. The family and their supporters were teleported to this this sort of frozen, snowy location, and they're put right in the middle of like this big charging beast. And the guy on the cover there, if you're watching the video, Dane, who is Queen Emporia's personal bodyguard, he dives straight into the action, no fear, to rescue one of Emporia's sons who's fallen towards the open mouth of this big, huge monster. And he, like, dives, catches the kid, shoots at the mouth of the big monster to get it to open its mouth and so they can have a soft landing on its tongue. And then they're quickly swallowed by the monster. But, of course, since they're just swallowed and not eaten, they're able to, like, blast their way out of his belly. And after that happens, then the group sort of jaunts around these different planets trying to get to Queen Emporia's sister. Her sister, because they're trying to escape the king. And King Moratz never knew that Emporia had a sister to begin with, because she had to sort of renounce everything that she was before she first met the king. So that involved never mentioning she had a sister, which comes in handy now. And then we get all these funny scenes and panels of them trying to teleport to, I guess, the sister's planet, and them winding up in all these different dangerous predicaments. And then they finally go to this one planet that's basically like, it's got like dangerous gas and the whole world's been like raised. And what they find out is they're using this this circular robot, I think that's named Tor. No, Chip. It's named Ship. And he has to be able to see where he's teleporting, but since there's so much toxic gas and stuff in the air, it can't teleport. So it appears that they're stuck there on this planet that's probably going to kill them with all the poisons in the air. But it's sort of like a simple story of, you know, a family trying to escape their tyrant of a father. But it's got great art. It's set in space, so you have all this sci-fi sort of jaunting across the cosmos vibe to it. But I definitely recommend it to people if you like that sort of thing. It's a Mark Millar book that's not, I guess, not an image book. So I guess it's still involved in his Millar world, but it's not all the same universe as all the others supposedly take place in.
All right.
I have one more book to throw out, and that is Deadpool and the Mercs for Money 5. This ends their miniseries, and they have a new ongoing series that's going to be starting next month. And this is still funny. It still has some great plot points. There's a character who's a time-traveling robot that can record everything it sees and hears. So they're dealing with this thing and dealing with these villains attacking other villains and being in the middle of this fight. And there's some great stuff that goes on with the story, but because this is the end of the miniseries, and there's the ongoing series that's coming up, the story just kind of ends. Like, it doesn't go out with a whimper, it doesn't go out with a bang, it just stops because it's probably going to be starting again when the new series starts. So it just kind of felt like, okay, well, this has been a fun arc, but it didn't feel like it was a self-contained miniseries the way it probably should have been, or maybe the way it was designed when they didn't know they were going to do an ongoing series. So you know, it's definitely, it's been funnier than the other, you know, Deadpool proper that's been going on. This is Cullen Bunn going back to the character, so he's always done very well with him. But, you know, the miniseries just stops. It's like, okay, we got to the end of the issue, and that's it. That's the end of the story. Goodbye. And that was it.
Okay.
So I was a little disappointed that it didn't actually wrap anything up, you know, well. You're just kind of left in the middle of the fallout of all the stuff that's happened and moving on. So I'm hoping that the ongoing series is going to, you know, keep going with the same creative energy that's been going on in this series, because this has been very enjoyable. Let's just hope for the future that it's still going to be as good when it starts back up as the ongoing.
Cool.
All right.
Good week.
Well, mine's already out there. Vision number 8.
Yeah, that's mine too.
Hey, cool.
I'm torn.
I will go ahead and third that.
Wow. I have some possibles because I liked Empress. Oh, I didn't even talk about The Fits number 3. Quickly, Image book. It's hilarious. R-rated comedy. Lots of cursing. I forget the main policeman's character's name, but he becomes the personal like bodyguard for this female celebrity. She's one of those child stars. She started as a child actress and grew old and went through all the trials and tribulations that most child actors go through. So now she's like acting out in public and all that sort of good things. There she is on the cover.
Nice.
And the police guy, whose name escapes me right now, driving the car. Some crazy stuff happens at the end. Like I said, this is my new favorite comedic comic on the shelves right now. Definitely recommend it. But for my click of the week, let's say, yeah, Vision was good. I like Detective Comics. I like Empress. I like Fitz. I think, do I want to sweep it with Vision? I think it's between Detective and... You already went and put Detective up for me, I see.
Well, there's Vision. I mean, I can do whatever.
Okay. Oh, you were just flipping through him. Man, Vision was good. I'm gonna go Detective Comics 99-34.
Whoa.
Nice.
I'm a fan. This is one of the rebirth books I've been looking forward to, so it did disappoint.
The whole Bat Family thing did it for you, huh?
Yeah. I'm a sucker for team books, so then one set in the Batman mythos, I'm all for.
All right, cool. I was about to say, it's like a Batman universe crossover book happening all the time.
Yeah.
Because it ties in all these characters that you would think would kind of cross paths every once in a while.
And I'm curious, is the mysterious figure, villain in shadows that we see at the end of the issue, is this one of the Watchmen?
Bum, bum, bum. Okay.
We shall see.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Ad read.
You got it. So this ad read is for Amazon.com. Keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon. Visit cspn.us, then click the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop. Purchase items from Amazon as you normally would, whether it be books, music, electronics, jewelry, apparel, etc. For every purchase made on Amazon through our link, Amazon sends the CSPN a payment that helps us keep the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles podcast free for our listeners at no extra cost to you. Amazon.com through CSPN.us. Do it today. All righty.
All right, so we've got the cinematic news of the week, kicking off with some old school. Adam West teasing a new Batman and Robin project. This is my first time hearing about this. So 2016 marks the 50th anniversary of the classic Batman television series starring Adam West and Burt Ward. And blah, blah, blah. The show, known for its tongue-in-cheek tone and can't be taken on superheroics, has become a blood fan favorite among comic fans. Blah, blah, blah. What is this talking about? So I guess
you gotta read it before you go on the air, Ted.
I love it.
That doesn't make it fun. Yeah, the Batman actor revealed during a recent appearance at MegaCon in Orlando, fans looking to get more of West and Ward in roles might just be in luck. He says he has a gag order, but him and Bert have been working on a new project that's gonna knock your socks off.
Right. Basically, it sounds like there was supposed to be an animated version of Batman 66 that was spoken about like last year or sometime, I think, is what this article is saying. And that might be the project that they might be talking about, but that he might be talking about. We don't know.
All right. Arrow Season 5 adding villain inspired by The Wire, Game of Thrones. So I wonder, is this an actual... Oh, the Season 5 bad is tentatively named Anton Church and looks like an original character. So it's, that was my question. Is this like a DC character? But if it's...
No, they're basically Stringer Bell. I think it's Stringer Bell type character. Sounds like...
That's a good way to go. I think the Arrow show needs some kind of pick-me-up. Maybe this will be it.
Mm.
James Gunn teased Thor for Guardians of the Galaxy 2. TMNT Shredder actor says Namor is his dream role.
Really? Really, Brian? What is it? It's Brian T, right?
Yeah. Hey, look, you got to put it out there.
I mean, come on. This is the bad guy from Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift. Come on, man. You are not Namor. I'm sorry.
Don't tell him what he is and isn't.
Right, man. That man bulk up if he wants to, you know.
Oh. We now have two Dougs on the show.
Yeah.
Who's that guy?
Who is that masked man?
It's the... Was it the...
Other way.
The Killer Bees.
Yeah, exactly. It is the Killer Bees.
For you old school WWE fans out there, get that reference. Superman will appear in Supergirl Season 2 premiere. So this was big news this week.
Yeah. They don't have an actor yet, but... They said he'll, you know, they've been kind of showing bits and pieces of him, so I guess it was eventually going to happen.
Right. My only question is, how is it, now we have a countdown till when Superman gets his own show on CW? Because you can't have Superman just appear on Supergirl and get the fans all riled up by his appearance and not...
Apparently your dogs are riled up.
Somebody's riled up for
it. You know,
they agree with me. See, I ignore them. The neighbors across the street have gone home, I hear, so they don't like that.
I love it.
Nice. All right. Yeah, I don't know. They could. I mean, you're right in a sense, but at the same time, I don't know. This show's been kind of holding its own with what they've been throwing in it, which I guess there's some more news that's looked down the door a little bit about it. But,
Let's see. Skip that. James Wan explains why he chose to direct Aquaman over The Flash.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. That's cool. Suicide Squad officially rated PG-13 for disturbing behavior and more. If you thought it was going to be R, you're dumb.
Well, people are probably thinking, hey, that whole, hey, Deadpool's R, so blah, 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 which doesn't mean anything.
Doesn't mean a thing. Legends of Tomorrow season adds Vitsen as series regular, but it's going to be a pre-Vitsen that we know from the animated series and her appearance in Arrow, previous wielder of the totem.
Yeah, that's a bummer. But still, we're getting Vitsen, I guess. So
I think that was, and it was because of
she's working
timing. Yeah.
Yeah, she's got stuff. She's got stuff going on. So good for her, though.
Yeah.
And I think she'll still be doing the voice if they. It looks like because I guess that means she's still going to. Since she's going to do the voice, they're going to do some more animated Vitsen stuff.
Yeah, season 2 is coming, and she's voicing her for that. So. DC's Jeff Johns clears up Justice League title rumors, and I think he sent out a tweet saying that the title is Justice League.
See, that was the weird thing, because when I saw this, I saw people were trying to figure out what the name of the Justice League was. Now, the thing that kind of was strange about me is when I saw this article, there was another article that called back to something we talked about last week with Avengers Infinity War, because somebody made an article, and it didn't get really picked up all that well, so it doesn't really matter, but somebody in some article took like, hey, this article mentions Avengers 3 as the title for, is possibly the title for Infinity War, which that was never officially said. But then, like, a couple hours after that, that's when I saw Jeff Johns' tweet about this. And now, I'm not saying that they have anything to do with each other, but apparently there were some people out there just trying to speculate on what the name of the Justice League movie was going to be, outside of what I saw. And,
yeah, just like with the Avengers Infinity Wars Part 1 and 2 being renamed, everyone started speculating on Justice League Part 1, and it was like, you know, Gods Among Us, basically a bunch of old, you know, video game and comic book storyline titles were being added.
Yeah, we'll talk about Gods Amongst Us in a little.
Ant-Man, Rocket, and Groot TV shorts among Marvel Animation upcoming projects.
Okay.
Good for them. Hmm. Clark Gregg speculates who could be the next director of S.H.I.E.L.D. Michael B. Jordan confirms his Black Panther role. He doesn't say actually who he's going to play, though.
Yeah, it's more that he's actually in it, not right. necessarily his actual role.
And along with Lupita Nyong'o?
Well, that one's still, like, he's saying that she's in it, but that's still not official on her part. Well, it hasn't been said official on her part, I guess. So. Mm-hmm.
She ain't spilling the beans.
Right.
Let's see what else we got. Minimize. X-Men TV series Legion to broadcast day and date in 125 countries.
Okay.
All right. Supergirl Season 2 will introduce Lex Luthor's sister, Lena.
Nice. Good job, Roddy.
I don't mean, that was
J.K. Simmons. J.K. Simmons gets jacked to play Commissioner Gordon in Justice League.
Yo, you saw these pictures?
Yeah, no, okay, now, that is crazy. When I saw, and I still, every time I see, I've seen the pictures pop up, I keep thinking that's got to be fake. He can't be that jacked. I mean, I'm not saying he could, but it's like that's just seems impossibly ripped.
Well, one of the, I see one of the things is that he's on a particular apparatus that is forcing his triceps, you know, kind of compressing them, so that one picture where it looks like he's got balloons for arms isn't what it appears to be, but what there's other pictures that show him on different machines to performing different exercises that just show that he's definitely cut, not the Jim Gordon that we've gotten used to.
Mm. I do love that somebody I retweeted somebody that was like, yeah, it was like he stopped doing those farmers commercials to end up being Master Roshi, and they showed a picture of Master Roshi all hulked up or whatnot.
I did see that. That was good.
I sent him a picture of Greg Capullo's Jim Gordon when he was Batman. I was like, that's obviously the inspiration.
Definitely.
Let's see. Batman and Killing Joke will show in theaters one night only. Harley Quinn, Shazam, and more confirmed for Justice League action animated series. Sacha Baron Cohen will become Mandrake the Magician.
Yeah, anyone going to see that? Anybody? Bueller?
Pretty much. Fantastic Four star says director's cut is a great, darker version of the film we'll never see. Not sure if that's a good thing or not. Do we need to see a darker version of crap?
I think a lot of people will say we didn't need to see any version of it, but that's I haven't seen it yet. So.
My son still loves the movie.
Oh, wow!
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Yeah, a friend of mine actually likes the movie. I need to go see it. I need to see it myself. But
if you have HBO, it's...
Yeah, it is on HBO now, right?
Yeah.
Cinemax's Outcast pilot racks up 4 million views via broadcast and streaming.
So, Tim, you watched this?
Yeah, I had it on in the background. I guess it comes on tomorrow again, huh? Or the second episode.
Yeah.
It's all right. Elizabeth Olsen is open to making a Scarlet Witch movie, only if it makes sense.
Of course, that's exactly.
I mean, you know.
Yeah.
That's about dollars and cents.
Well, the thing is, there's not a whole lot in the character that does make a lot of sense, but sure.
I have the same reaction anytime they ask these actors or actresses what they think of, you know, their character having a spinoff. No, I don't want to make extra money.
To some people, it is actually not about the money. Those people are rare, probably. But
no, I don't want to star in a driving vehicle. Leading
a star vehicle. Yeah.
Yeah, star vehicle.
I draw the line at making $32 million a year. I don't need to do it in the movie.
Sebastian Stan says Black Panther is a natural place for Bucky's return.
And everyone said, duh.
Well, I've actually seen some people like, don't put Bucky in this movie. I'm sitting here like, that. I don't see why. Now, if they put him in here, it's like, okay, yeah, they got to get him out because he's going to be the one to save Wakanda or something like that. That'd be stupid. But yeah, of course he would be in this movie because he's in Wakanda now.
That's where he is, exactly. Yeah. Like, whatever role he plays, be it, you know, the dude that they call in as backup or the reason why there's any sort of conflict in Wakanda, that is where he's going to reappear.
I mean, I just think they're, you know, like, all right, end of the movie, end credits, they're just going to throw him out then because they figured out what was going on.
Sure, that too.
And finally, if Archer gets a live-action movie, producers only have one star in mind.
John Hamm.
Oh, okay.
God, jeez.
That's not the person we had in mind.
Yeah, right?
What, who'd you have in mind?
I got it voices him. Actually, who's the guy that...
H. John Benjamin?
Yeah.
He's too dumpy in real life to play.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
It's true, but
that's awful.
Dumpy.
All right.
And in comic news...
Well, I mean, nothing against the guy.
I know, he's brilliant. Something that was a surprise to me, but Green Arrow Rebirth number one sells over 90,000 copies.
Wow.
I didn't think it was that good.
I thought it was fine, but I didn't think it was like, oh my god. But hey, you must protect this city. My pocketbook. My wallet. Panto and Spandex. DC Comics mashes up Batman and the Avengers. Not the Avengers you're assuming.
Yeah, not the Avengers that when you saw them in the TV guide just fooled you every time.
Dynamite launches new bi-weekly Grumpy Cat comic strip.
Oh, gosh.
Whoa, my screen jumped back to the news. Scroll, give me 1 second. There we go. Watch Batman battle the Justice League and first Injustice 2 trailer. I feel like that's a misleading headline, because it's not like Batman is just taking on everyone by himself. They're all fighting each other.
Yeah, but, you know, whoever made the...
Gotta have Batman in the name to get people to click, though.
Mm-hmm. I guess. But, you know, hey, Injustice the Gods Among Us number two, I'm here for it. I like the first one. It was pretty good. So and since the book itself has been going, I can imagine they could just draw from that for a story.
Maybe I'll finish the first game one of these days.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. As I remember. So I guess we'll see more on that, though, at E3 next week.
I think I finished that game. I'm not sure, though. All right.
Millar World announces Reborn from Mark Millar and Greg Capullo. So this is the big mystery project that Greg Capullo has been working on with Mark Millar. Josie and the Pussycats return a reboot comic coming this September to IDW, I believe.
Archie.
Oh, Archie. I'm getting Josie and Pussycats and
Jim.
Jim mixed up. Let's see. IDW, speaking of them, initiates a revolution. We talked about that last week, I think.
I wasn't sure if we did. Did we talk about that?
Did it come out before the show last week? The big Hasbro crossover comic at IDW with...
Who knows? Everything comes out.
We definitely talked about it, but I think this is the first real meat and potatoes information that we've gotten so far.
Right, this was a press release from it, basically. So.
It's a crossover. Let's see. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar writes Sherlock's brother in, what is this, in...
Mycroft,
thank you. From Titan Comics. Chris Sibylla gets demonic with Robert Kirkman's new comic. Marvel Now kicks off July 13th with a special midnight release. Oh. I know Dirk's store is going to stay open late for that.
Oh, sure, yeah, why not? Got nothing else going on.
No. Who needs to sleep, right?
Right.
And New York Comic Con 2016 gets its very own off-site book con.
Good for them.
For anybody who's going to North Carolina, Lord. New York City. I know. This is a separate thing from the con, but it's taking place at the same time. It's actual books, not comic stuff. But if you're into that kind of stuff, it'll be nearby.
Right. It's literally only a block and change away from the main New York Comic Con site at Jacob Javits Center. So it's a good place. They found a good spot to have a lot of these kind of related panels. The same way last year where they had the Hammerstein Ballroom for a lot of the TV related stuff. It's good that they're utilizing more of the surrounding area to hold more panels and events.
DC Comics signs Mitch Gerards to exclusive deal.
Yay.
Although I'd like to get more activity out of the guy. More the activity.
With Nathan Edmondson?
Yep.
Gerard Way to launch Young Animal Comics at New North Carolina Comic Con in November.
Okay.
Hey, Tim, your book got a fourth printing.
Which one was that? Let me scroll back up. Yeah. Oh, yeah, The Fits. Yes, go and buy it.
You were reading Paper Girls, too, weren't you?
Yeah, falling behind on Paper Girls, but I loved the story from Brian K. Vaughan, and I really liked the art from Cliff Chang and Matt Wilson doing the colors. Yeah, although the covers were cool because each cover had like a different color, main color going with it.
Hmm.
Leah Thompson returns to Howard the Duck.
Yeah, that came out cover. This week. Yeah, that came out this week. Apparently, Beverly's back in the
book. Yeah, she's in the main book, I guess.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, in the book that came out this week.
DC Superhero Girls Katana gets stunning San Diego Comic-Con exclusive figure. Fans, friends, and family invited to Mark Gruenwald 20th anniversary tribute. And DC Comics drops a fire mixtape to celebrate 75 years of DC music.
What?
Yeah, they started a Spotify account and they got this playlist on there.
I think there's Rebirth playlist on there too.
That is actually, yeah. I think that's mostly what the stuff is.
Okay.
Really? Is it like a mix of like is just all sorts of music or?
Haven't listened.
I mean, it's like it's got some stuff from movies. They got some old most of it's like movie stuff, like some Hans Zimmer, some John Williams stuff.
Okay.
Danny Elfman.
Gotcha.
Sun Ra, stuff like that, you know.
All righty.
And the final ad read of the night.
Sure. So we will do. I'm going to try to tweak the audible.com read. For you, the listeners of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. There are many books that you can choose from, such as The Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl by Issa Rae, The Best in the World at What I Have, No Idea by Chris Jericho, and The Andromeda Strain by Michael Crichton. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/comicbookchronicles. Again, that's audibletrial.com/comicbookchronicles for your free audiobook. Do it today.
Thank you for tuning in to tonight's episode of Comic Book Chronicles. Follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDOGG98 and at CBKron. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need.
Hi, Mom.
Haha.
Agent 70 can be followed on Twitter and Instagram at Agent_70. And Dirt is at PCN_Dirt and PopCultureNetwork.com.
Yay!
And with that, we'll be back next week. Actually, next week will be the week the show before Heroes Con, which Roddy Cat and myself will be in attendance for.
Nice!
Ordered some t-shirts to wear to the convention. One arrived yesterday. Hopefully I have the other one before next week. Be rocking those. They would look familiar because they're actually comic book covers that I guess Marvel turned into t-shirts.
Nice.
So looking forward to that. We'll be recapping it in the weeks to come, our experience. But for now, we are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Hey!
Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your